Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, why so many high-deductible plans are a pay-now or pay-later proposition. If you missed our show last week about how the rate of growth of premiums has finally slowed, you can stream it or you can find it on my podcast. But if that sounds like good news, this does not. The average healthcare deductible has risen by more than 10%, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. That's the money you have to spend out of pocket before your full healthcare coverage kicks in. So why are deductibles rising? What are you really getting when you choose a high deductible plan? And we'll talk about how to assess high deductible health insurance. As our guests guide us through the discussion, I'd like to hear what this means in your own family. Do you hesitate to go to the doctor because you haven't reached your deductible yet? How much do you have to spend out of pocket before you hit that full coverage? And are you, at this point, rethinking the value of a high-deductible plan? So talk to me about how this fits into your household economics. High-deductible plans, rethinking it. Do you have a deductible that's so high that you end up spending a lot of money out of pocket to get to it? Tell me a little bit about how you've made this decision for your family. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. I've tweeted out a question about this as well. Our guest, Thompson Adarokomi, is a co-founder and CEO of Nice Healthcare, directed specifically at high deductibles. Thompson, welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Sabrina Corlett is with us. She's research professor at Georgetown University and with us today from Washington, D.C. Sabrina, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Happy to be here.
Sabrina, if the rate of growth of premium prices is dropping, why are deductibles going up? I thought the same healthcare forces that would create a decrease in premiums would also be acting on deductibles. Why aren't they?
Well, a big reason deductibles are going up is because employers are actually shifting costs towards deductibles and copayments and coinsurance for their employees instead of into higher premiums. So every year, the cost of health coverage is rising faster than the rate of inflation. And at least so far, anyway, one of the biggest employer strategies for dealing with that is to increase deductibles. So yeah, while premiums are staying relatively stable, people are really feeling the pinch when it comes to that cost sharing, that deductible and copayment.
So Thompson, this is the idea of, as an healthcare consumer, I might be seeing a little bit of relief in my premiums. That's good news. But what I may not be realizing is every time I'm going to the doctor, I'm spending more in copays and I'm really not denting that deductible as much as I'd like to till the full coverage kicks in. That's how you see it too?
That's how I see it too. You know, the deductible increasing is increasing your risk as a consumer.
Uh-huh.
On any day, your paycheck is the same every 2 weeks, but now you have this bill that could just come out of nowhere and it's bigger this year than it was last year.
You formed the company, the Nice Healthcare Company, you said, in direct response to high deductibles. How so?
What we did is we decided to take everyday healthcare, the healthcare that 90% of the population uses, and say, let's make that a fixed payment so that you're not surprised. And not only that, let's make that fixed payment half of what you'd pay if you went to the clinic. So we've cut the cost in half and we've made it a fixed payment. So now primarily employers, but individuals and families as well, are basically putting a cap on their everyday healthcare, which is, you know, strep throat, ear infections, prescription drugs. We even do pharmacy delivery for free, x-rays in the home. They're controlling their costs and taking back, you know, the control over their discretionary income.
You know, in some ways, Sabrina, what Thompson said at the beginning is this idea of risk. That's the thing that feels so uncomfortable about this, right? It comes out of nowhere. I might have a $2,000 bill for health care, and I still haven't completely eliminated my deductible. That's part of what is really so uncomfortable about this, yes?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, deductibles are great for people who are healthy and don't actually need to use medical services throughout the year. And they actually, for people who are really sick, you know, the few people that account for the vast majority of our healthcare costs, really, really high cost conditions, they generally blow through their deductible in the first month of coverage, right? But for sort of folks in the middle that need just sort of that run-of-the-mill, you know, strep throat, maybe they, you know, break a wrist or something like that, those deductibles can really come as a shock. And they are. They're shifting the risk to the enrollee, to the employee.
You're kind of highlighting something that I was reading that Drew Altman, the chief of Kaiser Family Foundation, was saying. He says the deductible prices are affected by sick people who use their health care. Why would that be?
Well, so for people who are super high cost, I mean, today about 50% of our healthcare costs are driven by just 5% of the population.
Wow.
These are folks who, you know, are really on high cost drugs or, you know, babies in neonatal intensive care units. I mean, really, really high cost. Those folks actually are not, I mean, they have to pay that deductible up front, but for the rest of the year, the insurer is picking up the full bill, right? Because their care is so expensive.
And again, because they're using a lot of their care.
Right,
okay.
Right. But for people with more run-of-the-mill conditions, and I shouldn't say run-of-the-mill, but, you know, sort of chronic care conditions that have more modest costs, what's happening all too often is people might delay seeing the doctor or, you know, if they need, for example, if they have diabetes and they need a foot checkup or something like that, or their eyes checked, they might push that off because they know they'll pay so much at the point of service when they go to that doctor's visit.
And Thompson, just to make the case here on the larger economics of this, these are insurers saying, look, we're spending a lot on a certain small part of the population, and so we have to spread the cost over. These people are using a lot of health care, and they're getting quickly beyond their deductible. So we have to spread the cost and the risk to everybody else in the system. Is that how it works?
That's exactly how it works, and that's exactly what Nice Healthcare was created to respond to. Nice Healthcare was created for the 95% of the population that's not using a lot of health care, but they have a couple thousand dollars of unexpected medical bills that could pop up at any moment that could be catastrophic to their household cash flow.
Call here from Bruce on the North Shore. Hi, Bruce. How does this work for you?
Good morning. Well, I am a retired doctor, and for 40 years. And just a couple of things, and that is, during my 40 years of practice, I saw so much money go to men and women that were not taking care of themselves. There's one, you know. And then the other thing is that right now I'm supposed to go in for surgery for my back, and I'm neglecting it because I don't want to pay the dole.
As a former doctor, you probably know that it's – you're going to have the surgery sooner or later? No, you're hoping it gets better by itself? What, Bruce, are you thinking about this?
Well, yeah, we hope it gets better, but my physician has said, you know, you're probably going to go that way, and so I'm doing everything that I can to forestall it, but so there's that part. But it is that in my practice, I saw so many healthcare dollars just wasted on folks that really didn't care.
Okay. Two things to pick up there. Can I ask, Bruce, what your deductible is? Just give us the range, if you would.
I want to say it's probably, you know, we have good health insurance, about $500 or maybe, no, it's probably $5,000. I'm not sure my wife carries it.
Okay. So, Sabrina, the ACA plans have an average of about $2,600 deductible for a family and $1,300 for an individual. I wonder if the ACA, are we finding that most ACA consumers are choosing, thinking it's going to be cheaper, are choosing these high deductible plans?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, what we've found with the folks buying on the ACA marketplace is that they are very sensitive to the price of the premium. So they are gravitating to those lower premium plans, but with higher deductibles. Those are some of the more popular plan options.
Thompson, what do you think of what Bruce, the former physician, was saying about the waste in healthcare? I mean, we hear that a lot. I think most people would say, I go to the doctor when I really need it. I'm not part of the waste in healthcare, the high cost problem. What do you find?
So I'm a pro-consumer person. So for me, waste is in the eye of the user.
Meaning,
if the user wants to use it and they want to pay for it, then they should get it. They should be able to get it. And the problem that we have today is that it costs too much. You know, so even looking at Bruce, most consumers don't remember what their deductible is. So not only have you increased the risk, they don't even know if they have a $500 or a $5,000 deductible. They go in and they think it's, everybody wants to think it's lower than it is, but it's not. And then they have to pay the whole thing, you know, because they're responsible for that cost and they're not sick enough to blow past the deductible. So they wouldn't call it waste. You know, so for me, the responsibility of the healthcare system is to create prices that are affordable for people if you're going to push this risk onto them. I don't think the discussion should be about waste from a consumer-patient perspective.
So meaning if I, as the consumer, are going to have to take on more of this risk and take on more of the cost, don't also saddle me with these high prices for
Absolutely.
The services that I need.
Absolutely. That's what we're paying for. We're paying the insurance company to negotiate discounts for us. But instead of negotiating discounts, they're hiding the prices. The prices are going up every year, and they're increasing my risk every year.
Sabrina, you disagree with any of that, or does he, Thompson, really have the economics of this right?
I completely agree. I would also say I think I hear a lot from physicians frustration about patients who aren't taking their meds or, you know, aren't coming in for checkups. But we know from extensive research that the number one reason patients aren't complying with their treatment plans is cost. Mm-hmm. It's the cost of those things that's keeping them from that. And, you know, for years, I think physicians have sort of had their heads in the sand, like ostriches, around what those out-of-pocket costs are for consumers. I mean, in fact, I was just in with a doctor and I said, well, what's the difference in copayment between the generic and the brand drug? And he had no idea. He said, well, I don't know that kind of thing. So, you know, I think we need to get at some of these underlying issues ultimately before we can really tackle the issue of deductibles, because deductibles, premiums, that's just shifting the deck chairs on the Titanic.
It's interesting. I heard a story this morning. Every now and then, Morning Edition does this thing where they analyze a healthcare bill and they try to figure out why did you get charged, what you got charged. And their story today was about a woman who had a skin allergy test, and it was a multiple allergens, and she had to drive down to Stanford in California to do this. And the bill came and it was something like $46,000. And as they did some of the research, they learned that had she done some of these individual allergy tests, they would have been maybe $15, $35 a piece. But this service was being billed out and the bill sent to her for $46,000. I mean, you know, Thompson, that just, I think, indicates how there is no transparency on costs in it and how out of whack it is and what the response of consumers is. How could it possibly be that much? How do we get to the bottom of that?
I can tell you why. You know, so let me compliment your story with this story. We had a patient who had a pre-cancer diagnosis, but she needed additional labs to confirm the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And she worked at a clinic. And the cost
at a healthcare clinic.
Okay. And the cost of these labs were thousands of dollars. And she was going to skip them. Luckily, she knew someone that knew someone that knew about our company. And she signed up for a monthly membership, which, you know, at that time, you know, about $50, $75 a month. And we ran the labs for her. They only cost us less than $50. You know, so we have so many patients come to our company, Nice Healthcare, and they're like, my labs cost, you know, $500, $600. And we go and check our prices. These things are dollars. Same thing with our prescriptions. What we do which is what the health insurance companies are not doing, is we're passing on the savings directly to our employer clients, directly to our individual members, and that's why they're able to live within their deductible.
I mean, to be fair, your risk pool is fairly small, right? I mean, as we've said, that's what these insurers are doing. They're spreading out the risk and the cost among a risk of wider risk pool.
So by definition, the larger the risk pool gets, the lower the prices I should have to pay as a member.
Well, that's true.
Of that.
Yes.
So really, my prices should be higher, but they're not.
Sabrina, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I think we're really starting to get at some of the issues and problems that are underlying why we have such excessive healthcare cost growth in this country. And it is, as Thompson suggests, it's about the prices. You know, it's the prices, stupid. We pay more in this country for physician services, for hospital services, for labs, for drugs than any other developed country, and yet we have some of the poorest health outcomes compared to some of our peers around the world. We clearly have a value problem in this country, and unfortunately, with high deductibles and cost sharing, it's the consumers that are shouldering that.
This is a conversation, if you've just tuned in, about high deductibles, why so many Americans have deductibles on their health insurance plans that are so high that they hesitate to even get seen or go to the doctor, use their health care. And I'm asking you this morning whether you're in a situation like that. You chose a health care plan, maybe through the ACA, you know, maybe on the Minsure exchange, or just through your employer, and it's got a fairly high deductible. And that makes you think twice. We're going to talk about that's in some ways what these high deductible plans are incentivized to do. But it makes you think twice about going to the doctor. Maybe there are some of those cases where you shouldn't be thinking twice. How do you manage the idea of risk and these high deductibles in the way that you get health care for yourself and for your family? I mean, how does this work for your kids, too? That's a decision you have to make. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Sabrina Corlett with us from Georgetown and Thompson Adarokomi from Nice Healthcare. To the phones, to Dawn in St. Paul. Hi, Dawn. Thanks so much for waiting.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks.
How's this work for you?
Call.
Sure.
Well, it's most interesting in that I am getting my health care from my employer, in that I'm fortunate enough that I got to retire at 58. So I'm in between Medicare and my employer.
Uh-huh.
So with that being said, I have health care that costs me $680 a month. And, knock on wood, I'm healthy. Thank goodness. So, with that being said, I have a $1,000 deductible. I choose not to use it because the premiums are costing me $670 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So, I do the maintenance, as in I go for my physical. I do the things that are covered.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I work for the state of Minnesota and Department of Health. What I really like is to be able to go to a workout facility and have that covered to help maintain my health.
There's no investment in wellness. Hey, Dawn, I want to ask you this, though. What if you were in the situation that Thompson just described, where you've gone for the routine physical and the doctor says, you know, we really need to have something checked out, but it's going to be on you because it's going to be $500 for your labs. Now, there's half of your deductible. How would you make that decision about what to do?
I guess I would say, if that's all I have to worry about because I'm going to be cared for, I don't have a deductible to make. Is that what I'm hearing? That
I'm saying in your situation that you're in right now, you said, I don't like to use the deductible because it's $1,000 and I'm already paying these monthly costs. I'm curious about what happens when there's a moment that you have to decide whether to use the deductible and it's, your doctor's recommending it. How do you decide?
Yeah, well, I've been healthy, so I haven't had to do that. But I'm putting my care into my primary doc, and I value her decision, so I would go with it. I'd have to dig into my savings, but I'd do it. Because my primary is saying I need it.
Yeah. Thompson, how does that sound to you?
I don't think people have a choice. People don't want to be uncomfortable, in pain, or die. You know, these are reasonable things to want to avoid. So you're going to do it. The problem with healthcare prices, I mean, on an economic sense, is price elasticity is like water.
Hmm.
And what that means is it doesn't matter how expensive it gets, you're going to want it if you need it. Unlike, of course, if the shoes or the purse or the car gets too expensive, you're going to opt not to get it. But you can't opt out of not wanting to die or be in pain. And so that opens up a whole other bag of worms of what is healthcare and how should we manage it as a country. But that's why people will go into debt. My wife likes to say that Kickstarter is the biggest health insurer in the country, because half of the campaigns on Kickstarter are to pay for medical bills.
It's unbelievable,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Because you have to say yes. If it's your child, are you going to say no for your child or your parent? No way.
Sabrina, that really does blow my mind when you look on these GoFundMe pages. Much of it is for people who can't afford their own health care. What does that say in a larger sense, in a macro sense about this?
Yeah, no, and one of the biggest causes of personal bankruptcy is medical bills. And so it's a huge problem. One thing that Don's call did highlight that I think is important to mention is that one of the benefits that the Affordable Care Act or requirements that the Affordable Care Act put in place was that health plans, both employer and ACA plans, have to cover preventive services without any deductible or cost sharing. So that annual well visit or vaccines for your kids or smoking cessation programs, mammograms, those kinds of things do have to be free to the consumer. So that is a benefit. But, to your point, if the doctor says, well, we need to really do a lab or, there's something we need to check out, those are the things where consumers really can get hit with cost that are pre-deductible, meaning they have to pay 100% out of their own pocket.
Yeah. Brianna says on Twitter, to expand on that, I had possible rabies exposure, long story, went to the doctor for a round of shots. My bill was about $4,000 out of pocket. Whoa, which was a kick to the stomach. She said earlier on Twitter that she tries not to use her deductible if she doesn't have to. But there's a situation where you really have no choice.
No choice.
Right. Call here from Brad in Minnetonka. Hi, Brad.
Hey, Carrie. Great. Hi. Thanks for having me on. I get to feel famous about once a week when I'm on the line with you, so thanks for that.
Thanks for calling in. You work in the medical device industry, is that right?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. And medical devices are very, very expensive. For example, my company has a screw that you could get from Menards for about 39 cents. I've seen it there. And we sell it for closer to $600.
Oh, my God. What?
There's no difference.
Oh, my gosh.
So what I'm trying to point out, though, is that the cost of medicine, it doesn't come down to the insurers. It's pervasive through the entire medical field. Our physicians in this country are paid far more than in any other developed country for the same exact thing. Medical device costs way more. Medicine costs way more. It's everywhere, from the ground floor up to the top. And choosing or figuring out how we're going to insure people, that's not the problem. That's not the root of the issue. The root of the issue is how do we get the overall cost down, not how we pay for it, because we're never going to be able to pay for it. There's not an answer
to
that, because everything is just too expensive.
Right.
But that's it. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I'm glad you called. Sabrina, when he says it's pervasive through the industry, that also seems incredibly difficult to manage, right, to change. Is he right?
Yeah, well, when he was talking, I was sort of doing a silent hallelujah because he's dead on right. And unfortunately, there's just exorbitant markups, on drugs, on devices, on physician services, hospital services. It's just it's everywhere. And the problem is, I sit here in Washington, D.C., and I see the power of these industries in Congress and with the administration to push back against anything that would try to lower prices or try to lower costs. It's just, it's really, really tough to get at. But it is, it's ultimately what we have to do if we want a sustainable healthcare system in this country.
What's the reason for the pushback? I mean, I cannot believe that Congress does not feel the pressure of this from constituents, from No, Thompson is like shaking his head. No, they don't feel the pressure on this. Why?
No, and it comes down to Brad's comment that he's partly right. In reality, we, the consumer, we're paying the insurance company to negotiate discounts and get us good prices on healthcare.
Right.
Like, that's what we're paying for. We don't have a financial relationship with the clinic or the hospital because
right.
our country has set it up for us to offshore that relationship to our insurer. And then in turn, employers have offshored that to the insurer too. So really, the insurer is the nexus of all healthcare. All healthcare dollars eventually flow through an insurance company. So that's why we do have to look at the insurance company as responsible for negotiating these rates. And so when you look at our elected officials, they have really good insurance. You know, so their insurance is paid for. They're immune to these prices.
But I mean, I hear that. But what I'd say about that is the insurance company is also responding to the rates that the healthcare providers are setting, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
the cost doesn't begin and end with the insurance company, does it?
No, they don't set the price. But what the reality is for the consumer today is the only way to pay for healthcare is to get health insurance because we've been mandated to do so. Like, you have to get it. You know, so if I have to get insurance, and what I'm effectively buying is for someone who's an expert to get me good prices,
yeah.
and they're not doing that.
Yes.
That's a problem.
Sabrina?
Yeah, I mean, the health insurance companies, their job is to negotiate prices for drugs, devices, doctors, hospitals, and the truth is they're not doing a very good job. And that depends, you know, it varies market to market, but in a lot of cases, the provider sets the price and the insurer just passes it on. And they do it because they can. there's not a countervailing force on the other side to say, you know, enough, we've got it.
So I guess I'd ask, is the nexus of the problem with the providers setting, I mean, you know, I hear what Brad says about the cost of tools or screws that go into the medical devices. I mean, is that where the core of the problem begins? And then the insurers are not really incentivized to bargain those prices down? What would you say?
You know, like everything with healthcare, it's complicated. But I do think one of the core problems that we have in this country is the price of healthcare goods and services. There are other problems too, like a lack of competition in a lot of areas. I think we have, you know, healthy behaviors that are unhealthy behaviors that a lot of people have, and not enough of investment in wellness and primary care. So there's, you know, there's not just one silver bullet that we can deploy here, but price is I would say the, you know, the big crux of the problem.
Let me say it this way. Nice Healthcare is a full service primary care clinic with the same quality and the same levels of service or better than a regular clinic, half the price. Someone with insurance in the state of Minnesota can't use my service. They can't use their health insurance dollars. They can't have their deductible apply to my service.
Why?
Because the health insurance companies don't want to work with us.
Because your competition?
That's where my knowledge ends. Like, I just I don't know the reasoning behind it. I don't understand it. All I know is our prices are half. We have the same or better service, and we're not in network for folks to use.
Sabrina, quick question here. Do you feel like some of the change is going to come from, I don't know, startups and the competition that happens outside of the system? You know, we're going to Uberize in some ways the way our healthcare system works today. Is it possible?
You know, this is an industry ripe for disruption, and I think there's some really interesting trends. You know, for example, millennials are far less likely to have a traditional primary care provider than the rest of us. They get care at things like Minute Clinics or, you know, those retail-type places, which, you know, that sort of upends the traditional way that a lot of people get services. There's also things like telemedicine, at-home monitoring. hearing equipment that, I think could be pretty disruptive to the traditional patterns of care, but it's way too early to know whether that, it's really that those are the kinds of things that will really shift the playing field, or are they just kind of nibbling at the margin?
If you've just gotten in on the conversation, we're trying to get to the bottom of good luck, right? Of why healthcare is so expensive. We're talking about one aspect of that in a series of shows about healthcare ahead of the election, because a lot of voters are thinking about this today. It's high deductibles. Why are more and more Americans taking high deductible plans and then hesitating to use them because it's out of pocket spending and it's expensive, and people put off actually using the health care that goes towards that deductible? So your situation, the way you think about this, the decisions that you make in your household, valuable to the discussion here. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at @CarrieNPR, where a listener says the responsibility of for-profit insurance companies is not to negotiate prices, it's to return a profit to shareholders. We'll talk about pharmaceutical costs on the other side of news, and I want to come back to this idea that high deductibles were originally supposed to incentivize people to use less health care. Studies show that has happened. What's the consequence of that? We'll get a look at that. Back to our conversation now. Sabrina Corlett with us from Georgetown University, and Thompson Adarokomi, co-founder and CEO of Nice Healthcare. And I asked Thompson about this off the air because I see that your wife Hannah is tweeting, and she's talking about price shopping and how impossible it is. And she needs a surgery. We don't have to be specific, but you guys are trying to price shop for this. And what's happening?
What's happening is we're not getting answers. That's the summary of the story. We're calling multiple places. So it's not like we're calling one place. We have insurance, and we're covered. And we're not getting answers for the prices. And they're telling us that, we need to know this, we need to know that. And sometimes it's really being summed up as we're not going to know until after for surgery.
So you are calling to say, if I need this surgery, what's involved in this and how much would it cost?
Yes, because we have a deductible.
And the answer comes back, what?
We don't know.
And why don't they know?
Sometimes a person on the phone knows less about healthcare than myself or my wife.
Right.
And they tell us it's covered. Like someone's actually said that to my wife. She was adamant, it's going to be covered. And my wife was like, no, like I have a deductible.
Right.
Here it is. It's this much. Sometimes it's, it depends on the different things that happen in the service, because it's not like it's a bundled package. Mm-hmm. Certain places like Twin Cities Orthopedic in town here, they're pioneering the bundled price, where they can tell you that your knee surgery is going to cost this much, even though there's
straight ahead. Right.
Even though there's 1,000 pieces involved, they've bundled the price and they're committing to a price. So you, the consumer, or whoever's paying, know how much you're going to pay. But there's not many people like Twin Cities Orthopedic in town, or companies like that. So they have 1,000 things that go into the surgery, like the screw. They don't know
$600 screw for the device. Wow.
So they can't tell you how much it's going to cost. You have to go into it blind.
Sabrina, this is what's so infuriating about this, is that we as consumers are, so more of this is coming back on us. Find out about what your health care, be aware of this kind of thing, of how much health, and then it's impossible to get a straight answer on a surgery. Why?
Yeah, that's right. And we haven't even talked about what happens when you go to a hospital that's in your insurance company's network, but you have a service that's delivered by a doctor, or you have a test that's done that is out of network. And so you're hit with the full bill. It's called surprise balance billing. And then you don't even have a deductible apply. It's 100% your out-of-pocket obligation. And you may have done all your due diligence to find out that you're going to an in-network hospital, mm-hmm. Only to find out that the anesthesiologist or something isn't covered. So, the bottom line is that there are a lot of providers in the system for whom the patient is, they're a revenue source. but I think we're getting to a tipping point where patients and consumers have had enough. And it's just a question of what do we do about it?
Joy says on Twitter, our deductible is $6,000, so we go to a private clinic for anything that falls outside of covered checkups. They don't take insurance, and they offer great but affordable medical care, $39 per office visit. To the phones here to Chris in Mankato. Hi, Chris. What do you want to toss into the discussion here?
Well, you've touched on it a little bit since I've been waiting, but the big thing that I don't hear anybody talking about is the for-profit aspect of our health care and how, you know, insurance CEOs are making in the hundreds of millions of dollars between salaries and bonuses. And the other thing you have just been talking about, too, is the, you know, we're told, well, shop around, find the best price.
Yeah.
And yet most of our insurance companies will only let us go to one place.
Mm-hmm. So your choice, yeah, so your choice is limited on that. Let's talk about the for-profit aspect of this. I mean, Sabrina, when we had Minnesota, you know, was a leader in creating these nonprofit health HMOs, right? Health providers. And still, I mean, healthcare costs, even during that period, were going up and became unsupportable for a lot of healthcare consumers. Is that a key part of this? Where would you put that in this discussion?
Well, I do think the profit motive in healthcare has really gotten extreme. I will say, however, when you look at for-profit versus nonprofit insurance companies or for-profit versus nonprofit health systems, it's not so much about that status as how much clout do they have in the market, right? So you can have a nonprofit hospital system, and if they're, you know, the big gorilla in the market, they will set their prices really, really high just because they can. And it doesn't matter necessarily that they are a nonprofit. And the same with insurance companies. You look at some of the surpluses that these quote unquote nonprofit insurance companies have, and they're in the billions of dollars. They're just sitting on these big surpluses. So, I don't know that it's for-profit versus non-profit that's the root of the problem, but, you know, there is definitely a lot of profit-seeking in this industry.
Not that the CEOs aren't making a lot of money, but what do you want to say, Thompson?
Yeah, not that they don't deserve it. You know, they're doing their job, you know, but just for example, the NFL is a non-profit, you know, but it has a monopoly on football, you know, so the players, the owners, the coaches get paid millions of dollars. You know, so, but most of us don't think of the NFL as a nonprofit.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Right. I mean, the organization itself. So, I mean, it's really about this monopoly and oligopoly kind of behavior that allows an insurance company and the hospital systems to make a lot of money and pay people a lot, you know, but they're doing their job. Their job is to make money and then they get paid accordingly.
Kimberly says on Twitter, think about it every time the deductible. Just got a bill for a Velcro hand splint for a kid that came out of a white cardboard box from China in the doctor's office, $850. Oh my gosh, that is out of line, man.
I love that description.
That's crazy. To Brian in Minneapolis. Hey, Brian, thanks so much for waiting. Where do you come to this discussion from?
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm a resident physician here in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. And I've been doing a personal investigation on cost transparency specifically for medications for patients.
Yeah.
You know, I work in a primary care clinic, and, you know, one of our biggest problems is medication compliance. And a lot of times I find out it is issues with cost to the patient. And from a provider standpoint, it's very, we're really in the dark. We place an order, it goes to a pharmacy, then the patient goes to the pharmacy, and whether they have a copayment or whether they have to meet their deductible or whether they're in the Medicare and they're in the donut hole, they've got to kind of figure that out on their own. And a lot of times patients will not end up picking up the medication because of cost.
Wow.
And then we see the downstream effects of them coming into the hospital.
So
sick.
If you're diabetic and you need some medications, you're never hearing, Brian, or rarely hearing, well, I just couldn't take that pill because it was going to cost $150 a month and I don't have that. Then you see the consequences of not having the medication used. Is that right?
Correct. And, you know, there's different brands of insulin, for example. And some of it, for some of our patients that are low income, you know, you can only get them one brand and it's at Walmart. And it's more difficult to administer. And if you try to send something else to their pharmacy, you don't know what that's going to cost to them.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it's limiting. You know, frankly, in my investigation, my personal investigation, what I've discovered is that we need more transparency, an interface between at the provider's office about what that cost is going to look like to the patient.
How would that work, Brian?
Well, the way that there are some within electronic health records, there are some applications that you can actually run the prescription by the pharmacy, and you can see what the cost is going to be. But everybody's plan is different. Some people have, you know, high deductible, and they're going to, you know, have a co-payment to a certain amount, or they're on Medicare, and they have to pay $3,000 out of pocket before they reach, you know, a certain medication coverage.
Okay.
So everybody's different. And from a provider standpoint, when we are the ones giving the bill to the patient, essentially,
yep.
We're clicking the button and we're saying, here's your bill. We have no idea. And the markets on the medications change, like inhalers for asthma and COPD is ridiculous. The cost is astronomical. It's changing every month. It changes with, you know, every month when they meet a certain part of their deductible. It's impossible to track. And it's super frustrating when you hear your patients not using their medication and getting hospitalized because they can't afford it.
Which is hugely expensive and costs the healthcare system just all that much more. Thompson, I'm curious about how you manage this idea of how high drug prices are.
Yeah, we solve this problem at Nice Healthcare. It's quite elegant. We just don't mark up our drugs 850%. You know, so what that means is employers and our individual members pay a fixed monthly fee, very low, very affordable. Almost anybody can afford it. And we give them the drugs for free under that membership, along with the medical care, along with the labs and the tests. And what we found is when we've price checked, the markup on labs and prescription drugs is anywhere between 500 and 2,000%.
God.
When we price check. So what we just decided is we call it an ethical margin. We operate on an ethical margin philosophy where we're not marking things up triple digits.
I have to imagine that there is a limit on the kinds of drugs that you can do that with, because
yes,
I think it's specialty pharmaceuticals that are really driving the cost up here.
So in terms of the population at large, certainly specialty drugs, you know, drive the costs. But when you come down to the individual, like if you just picked someone randomly off the street,
uh-huh.
They're not on specialty drugs. So when we're talking about the people listening to the radio right now, most of them are getting bombarded with the cost of just regular drugs that they just need on a regular basis a couple times a year, but they have the high premium, they have the high deductible.
Right.
Whereas at Nice Healthcare, you don't have to worry about that. We cover 70% of the drugs that you would use in a primary care setting. We give it to you for free.
I have to say, Sabrina, the pharmaceutical piece of this is so infuriating. You know, how Congress prevents Medicare from negotiating and how the markups on some of these drugs. What's the answer to that? I mean, you heard what Thompson's describing here. What do you think the answer is?
So, again, as with all things in healthcare, it's complicated. But you do have, you know, number one, of course, is that the Medicare program is not allowed to negotiate, but also they can't exclude certain drugs, right? So if you don't have the power to say to a drug company, you know, if you don't give us a discount, we won't cover your drug.
Yeah.
Then that sort of takes away any leverage that you have.
Is this anything, and we've talked about this a lot on the show, is this anything but just the special interests holding control over Congress? Is it anything other than that? It's infuriating.
That is a lot to do with it. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the members of Congress, while they might go back to their districts and hear from their constituents about healthcare costs. They hear every single day, day in and day out, from the drug lobby, the device lobby, the doctor's lobby, the hospital lobby. It goes on and on. And I think, you know, it goes back to campaign finance and all, you know, those kinds of issues in this country.
Terry says on Twitter, how come a medication my wife takes is 450% higher than what I would have to pay for through a pet pharmacy if my dog needed it? This is really frustrating. Man, I feel your pain, Terry. To Jennifer in St. Paul. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
Hi. What does this mean in your family?
Well, so I had brought up an interesting point, I guess, to your people that I just had a kid last weekend, my second kid.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I had my first one in 2015, which was shortly after ACA was passed.
Yeah.
And one of the differences I've noticed between having my first child and my second child, my first child, I only had to pay about like $300 for prenatal care, which was related to like an extra ultrasound or something like that, because everything for ACA was supposed to be covered 100% for prenatal. My second time around now, I've had to pay several hundred dollars more, not just for like an incidental extra ultrasound, but for lab tests and all kinds of things that were previously covered 100%. I asked my provider why that was the case, and they said that they looked at my insurance plan again, which was not significantly different in any way. And they said that my insurer has since rewritten the plan so that coinsurance is now required to cover part of my prenatal care, even though ACA is supposed to be saying it's covered 100%.
Really interesting. This is it, right? The cost shifting onto you. Yeah.
And I was told that it's something that is related to a loophole in the ACA program itself that insurers are now recognizing as an option to use as a way to get out of covering 100% some of the preventative care that is supposed to be covered 100%.
Thompson is nodding with resignation on his face. Yeah?
Yeah, it's really a sad thing. I mean, the ACA says that the value of the health plan has to be X, and it also has to include these services, like this list of services. So that's quite a bit of latitude for how you shift and not shift costs onto people. I have a friend that was in the exact same situation. You know, they thought their prenatal care was going to be completely covered. They ended up $1,000 bills, you know, because the health insurance companies and employers, to a certain degree, have shifted the cost of some services to buyers, to users, to patients, because they've added these other services that cost money that the ACA insisted that they include. So really, you know, it's a fixed pie. You know, it's not just this infinite thing, you know. So if you add something, the insurance companies or someone's going to have to take something away to balance it out.
Do you ever wonder, Sabrina, knowing everything you know about this, where this is going to end? I mean,
well, you know, it's interesting. We're 2 years away from the 2020 presidential election.
Oh, don't tell me it's the next election. Oh,
well,
we've been saying that forever.
What you see on the Democratic side of the aisle is a lot of conversation about expanding the government role, right? And there's the Bernie Sanders Medicare for All.
Yeah, we've talked about that.
Other,
yeah,
you know, more modest proposals that would just sort of, you know, allow people to buy into Medicare or that kind of thing. But on the Republican side of the aisle, it's really about deregulating, right? Let the free market figure this out. And so, you know, I think we're probably going to have another big national conversation about what direction to go in. And I wish I had a crystal ball that you know, told us where we were headed. But there are two very, very different ideological views on where we should go and what will solve the problem.
I have to say, what is discouraging about what you've just said is that those conversations are not really real, and they're demagogued a lot by politics. Mm-hmm. And, oh, this is just, Sabrina, I love having you on. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Your clarity in explaining this stuff is really valuable. Thank you. Thompson, excellent to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, if you want to find the other shows that we've talked about on healthcare leading up to the election, they're all right there on my page or my podcast. Search NPR News with Carrie Miller. You can listen to the show about expensive healthcare and single payer. A lot of you listening to that, check it out.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.